Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard, not the billiards. It was
billiards room.
Come on already. Come on, we call it the
The place to be.
The place to be, yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ways to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
know
like,
nothing
about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay? Well, then what's the point of...
Scott Russo. What are you the point of that?
What's the point of giving him the Rockers theme? I don't know! you know what? I'm from now on just going to read. And if you want to comment, be my guest.
Just read things that are up to date. How about that?
Just shut up. I'm done. I'm not listening.
I don't know the fuck the Department of Health is.
To do worse than Josh Richard. Gotta make my way.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, here at you for another great episode, of course, of the Vintage Vault. And to join me, as always, our CD without muscles, my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing okay! And I'm gonna go out there, and I'm gonna say that! You can't see me sweating profusely until take out of the RCD program.
We can smell you sweating.
Yes. JR, it's always a pleasure. Welcome, PTB Nation, to episode 190 of the Place to Be Podcast. Yes, we are down to the last 10 for the big 200. Still, still working out the pieces
well, we got,
of that.
We got most of it in place,
yeah.
But
it's gonna be epic. I think you may like it more. I mean, I still love 100, but this one may take the cake.
Well,
it's not gonna
be
lie.
Different. Yeah,
it'll be different. All right, it is 190. It is Monday night, and you know what that means, as you just mentioned. I'm sure he's in here. Let's get right down to business.
Hey, what is going on here?
Nice donut, Tubby. All right.
You're so mean to him.
Why is he always in here?
So mean.
All right. Okay. Tonight, inside V Squared... We are getting on the entrance ramp for the Highway to Hell.
Fully loaded. Fully loaded. We're fully loaded.
When a man has a mask. When another man has no mask. Can't
when
do it.
One man almost dies in a Hell in a Cell.
Yes. What does this mean? A four-man main event. No. Okay. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be Podcast, we debut a new pay-per-view title, JR. Fully Loaded, 1998.
Suck a motherfucker!
The title would... sorry, but, you know, it would last for... Well, a few years, anyway. Of course, we are into the summer, where things, both in the WWF and in WCW, kind of heating up pretty big. As now we are no longer... it's no longer a one-sided Monday Night War.
No, two sides.
Two sides.
Multidimensional.
Yes. And of course, the wild card always ECW.
And when we get to the end of the review before the feedback, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the stuff going on Raw that didn't make it to the show and also what was happening across the pond in WCW. some interesting things, of course, this month over there. So we'll talk about both those things at the end.
Yes. All right. Are we ready?
We ready.
Let us hop in. July 26th, 1998, live from the Celland Arena in Fresno, California. Now, we had just started giving you the history of the arenas around the last time we were here, which was, my God, JR, 2.5 years ago. at the 1996 Royal Rumble. So
wait,
no
wait a minute, literally two. I'm like, we haven't been on the air for 2.5 years.
No, 2.5 vault years.
Okay.
At Fresno. So, but we already gave you the history of it, so we're not going to get into it. Your attendance, 9,855. The buy rate, 0.9. And your announcers, the usuals, the voices of the Attitude Era, good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. All right. We jump right in, JR, with a big debut. Well, a pay-per-view debut. But he's been on for a few months on TV. But a big a pay-per-view debut.
Jeff Jarrett?
Exactly. Feels like it is.
We don't talk about it every week.
But. Yeah. Jeff Jarrett, Double J.
And ladies!
And thank God it's not the creepy Jim Price version. Okay, new character here, and probably, JR, one of the more enduring ones of the era. Tell us a little bit about the other V-squared.
The other V-squared? Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, not the
V-squared. You even tricked me, see? Val Venus, it's his pay-per-view debut, portrayed by Sean Morley, a former motorcycle racer who was trained by Dewey and Jason Robertson in Ontario. His racy vignettes, usually emanating from the sets of his pornographic movies, began airing the night after WrestleMania. Beat made his Raw debut on May 18th against Too Cold Scorpio. Val was supposed to be a heel at the start, but he got over pretty quickly, especially with his very hot catchphrase of, "Hello, ladies." It was turned face within weeks of his debut. He began a little bit of a feud with Kai and Tai, helping Taka out, and gets ahead of this show by about a week, but we will mention it anyway because it's one of the most infamous episodes. In the weeks leading up to the 8-3 Raw, Yamaguchi-san, who of course manages Kai and Tai, kept complaining about Val Venus's pee-pee and said he was going to choppy-choppy it because Val had been banging his wife, and he was not too shy about it. Val was airing videos about it and everything else, so rubbing it in Yamaguchi-san's face. So Kai and Tai attacks him, and actually, we'll mention this now, but we'll get into it more at some time. Taka Michinoku turns on Val, joining his former stable, turns heel, and his former stable, rather, turns heel. Kai and Tai beats him down, drags him to the back. Raw goes to break, and as it comes back, the camera sees Val bare-ass with his hands tied to a rope from the ceiling and a chopping block in front of him. Yamaguchi lifts a samurai sword and is about to slam it down, but the lights go out, and Raw went off the air. The next week, it was revealed that John Wayne Bobbitt just happened to be in the area and saved Val by killing the lights in the room. Val later dumped Mrs. Yamaguchi and started banging some other women, too. So, yes. John Wayne Bobbitt, of course, was the guy who infamously had his pee-pee choppy-choppied off by his wife.
Yes, that is true.
Similar to Matt Rotella.
Maybe that's why he sways from side to side. Yes. when he hears that wonderful music. What did you think of this character from the get-go? I liked it. I liked it a lot, actually. Thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I definitely liked it. I thought he... It was good because he threw himself into it. You know, we talked about that in the past with guys who really go all out. You know, it was kind of a goofy gimmick, but it was the perfect time frame. It was, you could tell they tried to make it like Rick Rude right out of the gate. But the fact that, you know, this is the Attitude Era in the 90s, that shit's cool, not mean. So Rude, whereas he was a heel for sleeping and kissing with other guys' wives. Venus is a hero. So he immediately turns face. And, you know, before he matched, his little sexual innuendos and everything else. And yeah, he was a good character. He was a good worker too. And he was part of the youth movement. We'll see here throughout 98, a few more guys will come in throughout the fall. So they were really starting to fill out this mid card that had been thinned as recently as the Rumble. Remember that weak Rumble class. And since then we've really seen the roster start to fill up. And as we move to the rest of the year, a lot of young talent starts debuting. All these guys they had kind of been developing over the last year finally break through.
Yeah, and we'll see more of them come along as time progresses. But this one was a big deal because it was very risque, and I think Vince was now very comfortable, however. I think even a year ago, I don't know even though in 1997 this would have worked. I think it would have gotten a little too much.
I think it would have worked, only because that's where society was heading. I think 97 it would have fit, maybe 96-ish. Maybe, I think Goldust in 96 really ushered in this kind of stuff. So they didn't go full bore with it then, but I think any time after 96, Val could have worked. Now, would he have been a face immediately before, like, mid-97? Probably not.
Right.
But at this point, he's easily way over with the fans.
Yeah. Now, here he takes on a guy whose character, I don't know. How do you feel? How do you feel about him at this point? I mean, he made a big splash back at the end of '97. Cut that promo about how he got screwed over in WCW, which I don't understand, considering he was A, in the Horseman, and B, was, you know, U.S. heavyweight champion. So, you know, he wasn't doing too shabby.
Well, he kind of got hosed after that when the NWO started. He kind of got phased out.
A lot of people did, too. So, now he's just, what do you do with him? I mean, he gets into a great feud after this, that kind of culminates at
SummerSlam. And he starts to finally change his attitude and look a little bit, but here he just feels so played out.
Yeah.
You know, it feels the same as it was in 94, 95, and he's just kind of meandering around, and he's got Tennessee Lee with him, but they're not really doing much. It's a weird year for Jarrett. I don't know. He came in with a lot of momentum, and it's all gone already, and he's just boring.
Yeah, he is just there. Now, as for his entourage, and no, not E, or drama, we are talking about a new group of guys with his boy, Tennessee Lee, who's still there. But now he's got these other two guys joining him, speaking of repackaging and repackaging. Tell us, JR, about Southern Justice.
The repackaged Godwins, Henry and Phineas.
What?
This was good, though. I thought it was good. I think the Godwin gimmick had kind of run its course.
Absolutely.
We saw them into Mania, and still, you know, the heel turn helped give them life for another year, but they were really out of place at this point. So they get a little bit of a makeover. Now they're wearing suits, and they're basically like bodyguards, known as Southern Justice for Jarrett. So I thought this helped. Anytime you get a floundering mid-card heel, you put him with a, you know, muscle or with a stable or something, you start surrounding him with ways to get him over, and then it starts to work a little bit here by having these three guys in his corner.
Yeah, and I mean, they were good. You know, they were good for the company, and they were a great tag team. But yeah, just like Jarrett, though, they were a team that was very, they were a good run. But again, they were type of character where 1998 they just looked kind of stupid. So yeah,
I've
definitely worked here.
Two tickets to paradise.
A lot of people think Fresno is paradise. Never know.
Todd Weber? It's probably the only one.
Yeah. And maybe Grant Owens? I don't know. So the match itself is pretty standard. Let me ask you this, though, JR. Did the staleness of the character affect his work? I mean,
no, because he's always just
love Jarrett, but do you think his work rate suffered because of it?
No, he's always just been solid. I mean, he's not. I don't think he was great by any means at this point, but he's fine. I mean, he hasn't taken a step back at all. I'll say that in the ring, he's pretty much the problem is there's not much heat there.
Right.
That's the issue. No one really gives a shit. There's no reason. He's gone through all these permeations since he's returned. He was the bitter superstar. Then he was the Aztec NWA champion, and now he's back to his country gimmick, and had that kind of lame feud with Blackman, and just kind of floating around aimlessly looking for something to do. And I mean
right now we're still talking about kind of the roster being kind of still in flux, guys that fit, guys that don't fit.
Well, he's kind of hosed too by the majority of the upper mid card is now filled by the Nation and DX stuff. I mean, that's there's like 11 guys right there between those two factions.
Yeah, that's true.
And you still got other guys too, like Shamrock is up there. You got The Rock. Well, he's part of the Nation, but who else? I had someone else in mind I wanted to mention. Severn. Yep, and other guys starting to move their way up as well, like Val Venus, like D'Lo Brown. You know, just there's a bunch of guys that are slowly moving up the card too. So Jarrett is kind of stuck in limbo with that lower end, and that's why I think he opens here and loses clean to Val Venus.
Yeah, and it's a shame for Jarrett, but for Val, definitely a big win to get his career kick-started. And he gets involved in a night.
Paradise!
Love in Fresno, so says Todd Weber. Still can't hold that note. So sad. So there you go. Val Venus wins the opener. You know, again, good match. Nothing fancy, but not bad. Nothing earth-shattering, but a win for the new guy, and Jeff Jarrett floats aimlessly, although he will get involved in something after this that pumps us up to the big show next month. So he does kind of get a little hot here. And then, like you said, as we continue through the end of the year, he really starts to change his character for the better. And then he actually has a pretty good 99, but we'll get there. All right. Next match, pretty good. I enjoy this because it's two guys who really, you know, kind of needed a nice match to get their to get themselves established. One getting established, one getting re-established.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I think so too. Obviously, continuing the feud of the factions, as JR mentioned, Nation of Domination and Degeneration X. We go to the middle of the group, the two, I don't want to say the two cruisers, but...
I think you have the upper mid-card of the group, which is, you know, Triple H and The Rock. And then, to me, X-Pac was like next tier down for DX. Over on the Nation side, I think that was more like Owen. And then D-Lo's kind of the up-and-comer. Yeah, and then you have the Outlaws and Kama and Henry kind of bringing up the rear.
Right. So the match here, we say D'Lo Brown, complete still with his chest protector, taking on X-Pac.
X-Pac.
A guy who needed to get a match, a real established match again, singles match, and we had a big moment going into this match.
We got a couple of them.
Yes.
July 20th, major upset.
What?
One of those memorable ones of the time, even up until that point, really, in Raw history. Mm. And that is D'Lo Brown defeated your boy, Triple H,
what?
For the European title. One of the biggest upsets, Scott. D'Lo is just establishing himself as a singles threat, coming off that pec injury. Triple H had really had a stranglehold on that title since December, and out of nowhere, I mean, other than like the week that Owen had it, but out of nowhere, D'Lo takes a strap, and I thought it was a good surprise. I think, Hunter didn't really need that belt. He was obviously moving on to better things, and to let D'Lo run with it and have this little feud here, I think was really a smart move.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, it was, he had done a nice job, for the last, whatever it was, 7.5 months with it.
And this is actually non-title.
Yes, it was, which is kind of odd. Hmm. But yeah, Triple H was ready for the next step, and D'Lo needed the European title. It was good to actually have this extra belt in this early stages of the Attitude Era. I think it was smart to have an extra title. That juiced up the cards, and it helped guys out. So
right. Well, until this point, it's been a Bulldog's vanity title, Shawn Michaels' dick bag title, and then Triple H right behind him. So for the first time, I feel like it's actually going to become part. Of a storyline or part of a division, whereas before it was kind of just a vanity plate. So now it's actually being used in feuds and everything else. So D'Lo, to me, is really the first, official European champion, but the first, guy that's going to be involved with the belt more than just carrying it around.
Right. I agree. And here he takes on X-Pac, again, non-title. This was the week before, so the match was probably kind of using the old Bobby Heenan and Brainbusters philosophy. This match might have already been booked at that point.
I think it was. I think that's what
this was. This was obviously the Raw, the go home Raw that it happened.
Yeah, I think that's the story here.
Yeah, so using the Bobby Heenan Brainbusters philosophy, D'Lo says he's not defending the title. I like this match actually. For both guys, X-Pac actually been kind of floating around a little bit. I had matches, but this was his first real big stage match since coming back. It was pretty solid. He seemed like he was in a good groove, and this was really more for D'Lo. Obviously, X-Pac was already established. He just needed to get get back in the groove. But this was really for D'Lo. This was really to make this he's not just Farouk's and then eventually Rock's flunky.
Right.
Only known for getting stunned on the roof of the truck or on the hood of the truck at In Your House DX.
More of the upcoming youth movement that we've been talking about. So.
Yep.
I mean, it really made sense to me to have him start to advance and do things on his own a little bit and put him in that Val group. We'll track him as we go. Val 1, D'Lo 2.
Yeah, and he's definitely become a serviceable mid-carder. He was very chunky when he joined the Nation. He was kind of like Boss Man 88, kind of joined the Nation, got on camera and was huge. And he's not, trim or anything, but he's definitely lost some of the flab and definitely getting into some work and shape. And it was good. It was good. Cut a great promo before the match, talking about obviously not putting the European title up and dressing X-Pac down. But it was a good match, 8.5 minutes, perfect length.
Well, we need to talk about the build other than the European title change, Scott. Of course, the Nation and DX have really been heating up since May. Mm-hmm. And on July 6th, things went next level. Things got real.
Nation's here. That's, let's see, the Nation's coming out. No. Oh, my gosh. JR, look at this. I am not believing this. Well, you got to know your role. And I think we're going to find out what everybody's role is here now.
Look at DX. I mean, of the Nation. Look at the front, a rock. And look at B-Lo over there.
B-Lo. That Yahoo dressed up like Owen Hart.
I guess they're going to come down here and lay some smack now.
I can tell you this. I know that The Rock is in Miami and is home watching this tonight. Owen Hart's in Calgary. And Mark Henry's down in Texas.
And I'll bet the furniture in all three of their houses are flying around the room right now. Look at this guy. No. What?
Well, we have not seen DX all day, folks. This is very uncharacteristic for these guys.
What does that mean, Hart? What does that mean?
You Neozo.
Look at this. This is great. He is The Rock. Look.
The part of The Rock will now be played by Triple H. Look at that eyebrow.
Amps up. Close down.
Look at the Godfather.
Let's see.
What'd that mean?
What? Classic. You ready to smell what The Rock's cooking?
You know, the croc just came from the bathroom.
The croc.
And you should have smelled what The Rock was cooking.
Oh,
look at B-Lo.
Nation ain't gonna like this.
I ain't faking. You should have smelled what The Rock was baking.
The Rock was baking. Brother was baking. Look at D-Lo. He's the man. He's gonna shake his hand. I'm sorry, that's B-Lo.
Uh-oh. What's going on here now? Wait a minute.
Uh-oh, it's the people's elbow, JR.
Ah, the best damn elbow in the business, according to The Rock. Look at this.
As a matter of fact.
People's elbow.
And the people are standing up. Look at this.
When it comes to the croc and the ladies, and the croc hits rock bottom, he has no choice but to lay that smack down on himself.
You hear that? The brother smacks himself down. Oh, look at me.
Oh, man. Can you imagine The Rock? He's broken every piece of furniture in his living room right now.
Hey, wait a minute. Look at this guy. Is that his nose or did he park a bus on his face?
Supposed to be Owen Hart.
Well, enough is enough. And it's time for a change.
Listen to that. It is Owen Hart. Did you hear that
so
voice?
So what? Nobody listens to me. Nobody gives a damn what I think. And what the hell am I doing wearing this ridiculous outfit? I look like a damn road sign. What the hell am I? A school crossing? You know, I tried to be a tough guy. But I just couldn't grow my damn beard in. And you know what? I am not a nugget. I'm a black heart, damn it. A winner, a soul survivor. Woo!
Oh, things are not well in Calgary tonight.
That is Owen Hart.
And if anybody smells what The Rock is cooking, it's me. Look how big my damn nose is. What the hell am I? An aardvark?
What does the brother look like? An aardvark?
B-Lo, look at B-Lo.
Hey, 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 Rock.
Me as Ark Henry.
I don't know what you're cooking. Smells like
oh, my.
But I think I'll eat some anyway.
You know something, Mark Henry? Me as Ark Henry.
Right.
I know you're the world's strongest man, and the Croc's got a hell of a body himself. But there's one thing the people want to know. How do you get your pecs to go all the way around your back like that?
Oh, man.
All right. We'll wrap there. I needed to play the whole thing, though, because that still is just phenomenal stuff. I mean,
oh, my God. Pure gold.
Yeah.
Pure gold.
The Mark Henry thing, I mean, Andy and I used to say that over and over for, like, years afterwards. We still do every now and then. To me, that was the best part, the X-Pac is Mark Henry. So just to quickly break it down for you, of course, Triple H was the Croc. X-Pac, Mizark Henry in full-on blackface. Road Dogg as B-Lo,
yes.
Also in blackface. Billy Gunn, also blackface, as the Godfather, comma, Bin Mustafa. And Owen Hart is portrayed by a young fan trying to break into the business named Jason Sensation out of Canada. DX ripped the Nation apart in the skit, of course. And the next week, the Nation fired back. Biggest shot fired by Owen Hart. Jason Sensation was on commentary. He was doing some little funny promos or voices for JR Lawler. He was doing like Vince and all these different people. And Lawler kept having him do Owen. So Owen came out and got pissed off and smacked him around and put him in the sharpshooter. It was also after the skit that Kama really began to adopt that Godfather character.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of slowly adding the trademark hat, the cigar, and kind of brought into the pimp stuff. I don't know where it all came from. I don't really know the origins of it. It's like they mentioned it here, and they just starts doing it. It's kind of weird, but...
Yeah.
So, anyway, there you go. That's that skit. I think we should probably move on to the next match by now, because we spent quite a bit of time on a low undercard match, but...
Yeah.
I feel like we had to hear that clip.
Yeah. No, you have to. It's a iconic moment in the history of the Attitude Era, and I couldn't grow my damn beard in.
Yeah, yeah, he was great.
I wonder where he is now. I have to find him somewhere.
He was.
We have him on as a future PTB guest.
Well, Jason, wasn't he upset? Didn't he speak out against them? I forget what the hell the reasoning was. I don't know if he was mad he never got a job, or he. I forget what the deal was. I don't know why they didn't hire him. It seemed like they were definitely going to, and then, I don't know. I don't know what happened.
It's weird. Yeah. Well, I mean, he wasn't a big dude. He was skinny as hell. So I don't know what they would have made him as. But in any event, D'Lo Brown, your European champion. Thanks to some shenanigans with Mr. Bin Mustafa,
yes,
wins the match over X-Pac with a lowdown, which is, he's got two finishers, the lowdown and the sky high. Although the sky high was really not the finisher, the lowdown was the finisher. He doesn't retain the title, he didn't defend it. So there you go, D'Lo Brown with a big win.
Yeah, nice win over X-Pac. Yep.
Yes, to get his career. X-Pac didn't need the win, didn't matter to him. Before we get to the next match, JR, we get a glimpse of the future, literally. Mm-hmm. We look through the crowd, and who do we see?
See this man named Edge. We saw many vignettes of him throughout the summer where he was just kind of perusing around on a subway and yelling to himself and all kinds of different crazy shit. He had debuted on Raw by this point, I believe. He had his first match against Miguel Perez, and then he kind of vanished off TV again because they went back to brooding in the crowd. We'll talk more about him next month, but we see him here just kind of chilling out in the crowd. He has a trench coat and sunglasses on.
Yes, and he would, he may not think it now, but he ends up playing a big role in the future of the business. But for now, he's just a mysterious guy with long blonde hair, and he may have one of the coolest indie names ever when we talk about him when he makes his debut.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny. All right, next up, wow, this is like the tired gimmick guy match here.
It's like the old remnants of 97 hanging on for one last...
Yes.
One last match.
Hanging
around like old dogs.
That's right. None of them wearing pink polo shirts.
It's too bad. Maybe they would have gotten over.
No. Yeah. Well, one of them. Bradshaw, you want to be my partner? Terry Funk.
I got a
pink
cowboy
hat. The Funker, huh?
Yeah, hanging on.
Hanging on. And teaming with Bradshaw.
I don't do any tricks.
I want to be fully loaded. I'm not... Oh, come on. We'll take on Farouk and Too Cold. You like those guys. Come on. Don't make me ask Bradshaw. Terry Funk Bradshaw. Taking on your boy Farouk.
Farouk is
what happened to him, huh?
Oh, just another guy like Jarrett. I put him in that category. If you want to start
compartmentalizing?
Yep. These guys, we can start breaking them off on those levels. We've talked about the new guys, we talked about the upper mid card, and now you have these four really just hanging around. Farouk and Bradshaw to me are in that same level, and even Scorpio, I guess, is Jarrett. Funk doesn't really count, he's on his way out. But, you know, just kind of guys you don't know where they're going or what they're doing. And Farouk is just as stale as Jarrett. They should put them in a team because they had nothing else going on.
Yeah.
Once his feud with Rock, you know, that went on too long as it was ended, he really had nothing going on here. So he will just really hang around for a while until he finally kind of gets himself into shape and finds something better to do. But that's a ways away. This is Terry Funk's final pay-per-view appearance. Of course, we talked about Flash Funk's transformation to Too Cold Scorpio back when we reviewed that Raw a couple weeks after Mania, and that was thanks to Terry Funk, brought him out and told him to embrace his ECW roots instead of prancing around in a pimp suit. So Scorpio is back in his old gimmick. Funk, after the show leaves, his final record is 3-2, mm-hmm. and if you count the two Rumbles he was in, it's 3-4. His only wins were at WrestleMania 2,
yep,
No Way Out of Texas, and WrestleMania 14. Lost at this show and lost at the Wrestling Classic. Funk announces before the match he's taking some time off, and then Bradshaw looks pretty pissed off. He thought he was gaining a full-time partner, and now his buddy's leaving. This always kind of bugged me a little bit because I was kind of like, you know, there was no tie between these two. They weren't like friends for months leading up to this. I was like, why does Bradshaw even care? He's like all pissed off that Funk's retiring or taking time off. It's like they just started teaming at the show, so that was kind of weird.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I don't know if it was – it kind of is reminiscent of the whole the NWA feud between Jimmy Valiant and Pistol Pez Watley when Valiant cuts a promo, says something weird, then all of a sudden, you know, Pistol Pez's face changes and he beats the hell out of him and cuts his hair and becomes Shaska. Same thing here. It's like all of a sudden Bradshaw's like, why are you so angry now? I thought he was going to turn on him or something. But yeah, very weird. Very weird. The match itself is fairly terrible. Not much going on here. Just
I
not say
it's terrible. This is nothing special.
No, it really is nothing special. Too Cold, you know, faded. Obviously, no, nobody wanted to see a pimp looking guy. There weren't too many pimps in this federation. Pimps and porn stars. It would have been if these guys all kept their gimmicks. So he went back to Too Cold, and you know, obviously, diehard ECW fans know that Too Cold is a solid wrestler, great performer. And again, Vince brings these guys in, and they never wrestle to the fullest of their capacity, which is disappointing. Farouk, what do you think of your boy here?
No, I told you everything about him. Just...
same as this every month.
Uh-huh.
Same as this every month. It's just kind of there.
Yeah, and I think that he's actually gone for a while now. I don't think we see him. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So, by the way, they win the match, though. He goes out with a bang. Him and Too Cold defeat Funk and Bradshaw.
Yeah. Well, Bradshaw kind of, I don't want to say turns on him, but he just kind of leave him out to dry.
Yeah, pretty much. Bradshaw was still, you know, he had that weird thing going with Kai and Tai, and then now he's kind of back to being a heel. And nobody knows what he wants. He's like this, he's a guy that it's that seems like they want to really push him, but you don't know what to do with him. You know, what do you do with him?
Exactly, yeah. It's so like, now, it's again, like you can tell he has talent, you can tell he has the look. But you're right. They just don't know really what, where to go with it.
Exactly. So there you go. So why don't we move on? There's not much more to talk about there. All right. Next is, the heavy poundage match. Get the restraints on the ring for this one.
The heavy poundage?
The heavy poundage in
the
ring.
I thought that was a Triple H match for you.
This is the put down the fork at Golden Corral match. Mark Henry, or Mizark, taking on a guy who pretty much admitted he was a fat shit, and that is the Mastodon Vader. Oh, this is terrible. Oh, my God. So bad. So bad what's happened to Vader. I mean, we're not going to get into the whole thing again. But... Well, all right, fine. I will.
All right, will you tell me... Really, what would you have done with Vader at this point?
Probably released him.
Okay, that's an option.
Yeah, I would have released him. Let him go. Let him go back to Japan. You know, maybe WCW would have taken him. Let the guy reinvent himself because he's done here. Done. He's done. You've done nothing. There's nothing more you could do to him.
So
you can't do much worse.
So you don't think, like, how they're using him is fine?
No, how they're using him is fine, but... If they really feel like there's nothing left, I mean, if there's no one left for him to put over.
Well, they do. I mean.
Yeah, but who knows what they're paying him at this point? I mean, I don't know if he was still.
Too much. I mean, you think we have, you know, the thought we know of where Mark Henry heads after this kind of probably shades the value of this. Mm-hmm. But I don't in the at that time, Henry seemed like he had some value. Like he was finally healthy. He was with the Nation. He was kind of getting over a little bit. I think having him take out a big hoss like Vader in 5 minutes clean, that was a pretty big win for him. And you can look back and say it was a joke or a waste, but I don't know. I thought it was pretty good at the time. I thought it was a good use of Vader. I really do.
I'm not saying it wasn't. We're not going to get into the same debate. We had this debate a couple of pay-per-views ago, but all I'm saying is if they, I don't know what they were paying him if he was still making the same money he was making when they came in 96, which I'm sure was a pretty penny at the time.
Not the Vader or Mark Henry?
Vader. I mean, when he came in late 95, early 96.
I didn't realize you had the contract details in front of you there, Meltzer.
Well, according to the... Well, I mean, common sense. I mean, the guy was a main eventer in WCW. He was former champion just because Vader... Or just because Hogan treated him like shit and buried
him. Yeah, but don't
him
forget. I mean, WWF at the time, they were not giving out guaranteed deals or anything like that. I mean, they still were just giving that proverbial, you know, lottery ticket. So here's your downside and here's your chance to make some money through appearances and merchandising. So he may not have been making that much at this point. He wasn't on you know, featured heavily on TV or pay-per-views as much, so he might not have been really bringing in too much bank. He wasn't really a big merchandise guy either.
That's the big thing. I mean, if he was, I mean, I can't believe they never sold his mask. That would have been kind of
just a weird misuse. You're right. All along,
what was the point?
I think, well, bad timing. We talked about this before, but I really think he would have been better suited to come in 95. I think they could have really used him to feud with Diesel and other stuff. And I think by 96, they really wanted that belt camped out on Sean. And then by the time that he was going to get it, you know, he got hurt or the JJ thing, which maybe we'll find out more about finally. You know, all that kind of backfired, and then he was out of time. He just kind of was bad timing. Like I said, if he came in like late 94, maybe feuded with Brett, and then 95 feuded with Diesel, I think he could have been pushed better.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he gets Sid's run in 95, you know?
Yeah, entirely possible. And I think Sid's run, I think it would have been even better. you know, that laugh's like, yeah, you guys are idiots. so there you go. Vader's, not good here. Not good. But, I mean, I understand the role he's in. I'm not disagreeing with that. But, I mean, a guy like Vader... probably still marketable in other places around the world. I mean, I'm
sure, but that's not their concern.
No, but I'm surprised he didn't say something like, look, just...
Well, he may have been, and they might have said, no. They may have already had that agreement. They might have said, look, your contract's up at the end of the year. We're going to let you walk. Just, you know, put some guys over, please, for us on your way out. And he might have been fine with that. Who knows? He's getting paid. He's on TV. And they put some guys over, and that's it. So, I mean, I watched the Raw recently from October, and you can check that out on my blog on bigelow34.proboards.com. If you look at that there... the pop he got and the energy he had, even in October, was still really good. I mean, he was really putting the effort out at that point. And you kind of look at him and think, oh, maybe there still was a spot for him. But they were just loading up on so many young guys and fresh characters. And they were already trying to turn over a lot of the guys we had in 96. Remember, 96 was a year that turned over a ton of guys from 94 and 95 and looked like that was going to be the fresh start. But that was almost like 96 and 97 almost became kind of a bridge 2 years, and they end up filtering out a lot of guys again from that era and start rebuilding with, you know, here in 98 and 99 with a lot of youth.
Unfortunately, the same thing's happening now. Obviously, Vince is still trying to kind of build his capital. He's still trying to make some money, so he's trying to load the roster with young guys, cheap, not making a whole lot of money.
Right.
And guys like Vader are albatrosses. But again, I mean, you might be right. Who knows what the contract structure was. I'm sure it's not WCW deal where you're going to make $5 million a year and sit on your ass and do nothing. Yeah. I'm sure that wasn't the deal.
No, not even close.
Yeah, not even close. So, but Mark Henry does definitely get the win. Yeah. The match is just not
good. The match is garbage, but it's a fine win for Henry. I think it was good, and I think he needed it. So, there you go.
Yeah. All right. I feel like we go up and down when we get into these guys as we get to our next match. A little tag team action here. I saw you with your man, smiling, a coach bag in your hand. I was laying in the coupe with my hat turned back. We caught eyes for a moment, and that was that. I didn't know you drove a coupe. I wonder if we would have been on MTV. I wonder if we would have been on NBA TV back in the day. You know, it was all about the Ruckus. So
driving the coupe,
sitting there with Fat Joe and his title belt. All right, of course, with that music playing, we are talking, of course, about Hawk and Animal, the Legion of Doom. And here they take on a few that had been brewing for a couple months, and obviously they wrestled previously, and that is...
They had been brewing like the love in your heart for the LOD.
Exactly, which is now becoming pain and sorrow. And that is Skull and 8-Ball. That's all that's left of the DOA, Disciples mm-hmm. of Apocalypse. Chains had left. So pretty much the Skull and 8-Ball against Hawk and Animal. But I thought I would get a little hope in my eyes when...
You found that bottle of Viagra. You lunged for it.
Yep.
But alas, it was empty.
But they did dump Sunny because the LOD Sunny experiment failed miserably.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a mess.
Never saw
anyway.
That coming. Yeah, all right, let's get into a couple things here. So. Okay, let's get into Sunny first. Okay. We've already talked about it a little bit. Became a load to handle backstage. Rumor drug problems escalated. Vince ended up cutting ties with her, the first original, you know, true diva. Ended up in ECW with her husband, Chris Candido, for a bit. Then they both jumped to WCW in 1999. Tammy would never really regain that fame, though, that she had back in 96 and 97. Her life quickly fell apart. Drug problems spiraled out of control. Ended up hooking up with Missy Hyatt. Made many of fans my age dreams come true. Mm-hmm. And probably got a few of yours arrested for being creeps.
They weren't 14.
Come true when they created an amateur softcore porn site. Soon after she allegedly cleaned up, however, she ended up putting a lot of weight. It was now a far cry from the sex pot Sunny everyone had watched on TV, but I think everyone was just happy for her, even though she wasn't the beauty she once was in her early 20s. I think people were happy to see her getting things cleaned up and getting her life back on track. And then tragedy struck in 2005 when her longtime husband, Chris Candido, died tragically from a blood clot following surgery on a broken leg that he suffered in TNA. Tammy spiraled downward again through a drunken fit, had a big face-to-face flip-out session with Bret Hart at some kind of fan festival, and then seemed to have cleaned up a little bit again, was on the Raw anniversary show, looked good, and of course recently, as Kevin talked about last time he was on, out of control one more time with her ex-boyfriend, I guess, breaking and entering and all this other shit going on. So,
yes. In the fine Connecticut town of Brantford.
Yes.
I don't have any words to describe it. I have no idea what that even means. But Sunny was just a sad situation. And I think a combination of it in the beginning in 98 was obviously she was being, in terms of the diva, in the company, she was being pushed aside in favor of Sable, which was
right. But you know, it's her own fault. I think Sable. I think they both could have been big. You know, I don't think it needed to be one or the other. But she just self-destructed. I mean, between the drugs and then the stuff with, you know, allegedly with Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and everything else. You know, Kevin really got into it, so we don't need to analyze too much more. But
no,
you know, it's sad. A star could have been, and she fizzled out so quickly. But I mean, for about a year and a half there, she was definitely the hottest thing going in wrestling, and. Yeah, it's too bad. It's too bad to see what happened. So she left. LOD is now alone. They dump Sunny. And they decided they need to once again regain their old form. So they're going to bring back a piece of the history. And just like at WrestleMania 8, mm-hmm. only without Mean Gene in the platform, they bring out Paul Ellering.
Yes.
So Ellering manages them on Raw at a match against the DOA. Of course.
Yeah.
Soon showed his true colors and turned his back on his former charges. Claimed he was a man of the future, and the LOD were retreads. He was going to go with the Young Stallions, Jim Powers and Paul Roma. He also became an internet pundit and began calling himself Mr. .com. So his newspaper now was, I believe, he still did carry on the newspaper?
Yes, he did. Or it was a magazine now.
He had something. So I don't know. I don't think it was like a laptop, though. I know he talked about...
No, he didn't do that.
He talked about investing in the web and everything else. It was kind of cool, but it was a little bit ahead of its time. Like, it seemed like he was talking about, you know, like Black Magic. Not the tag team, but, you know, like wizardry or sorcery at the time. Like, all this... I mean, the internet was starting to bust out, but for him to be, like, so up on it was kind of weird. You know, a couple years later, that gimmick may have been even cooler.
Kind of wish Black Magic was in this match.
They were a much more polished tag team.
Yeah. I hated that. Hated it. I could not wait for this feud to end. Hated it. Yeah, I was mad. Paul Ellering turning on his own team. No. Sorry. No. I could deal with them being knocked down notches and getting older and putting guys over. I can accept that. But the one thing that was the lasting legacy of this team was their manager. And they just senselessly had him turn on them. And I didn't mind the .com thing, but I don't see why he couldn't do that with them. It just was dumb. I hated it. Absolutely hated it. I would have been happy they were just on their own. Would have been just happy if they were on their own. Or if he didn't come back at all, or if he just stayed with them. I didn't like it. Stop it. It's not fair.
Well, this isn't going to shock you, but I liked the turn. Look, you need to just accept it. Your boys are done.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but why do they have to do this, though?
Well, because DOA, I mean, all right, are they shit in the ring? Yes, but they were a little bit younger, a little, you know, trying to get them over as a heel team. I thought it made sense. I thought it added more heat to them, and it added more support to LOD. You know, they were screwed again. And I think they were building to kind of a comeback story, and then they get sidetracked into this other stuff with Hawk, which we'll get to. Yeah. But I didn't think it was the worst idea. It kind of reminded me of the Fuji Powers of Pain demolition thing from the end of 88.
Yeah. The system difference is he's going from a hot team to a needing, you know, a getting, what? Becoming a hot team.
A hot team?
Fuji. He's going from demolition to, yeah. He was going from a hot team in demolition to a up and coming team in
right.
Powers of Pain. Here, no, not these teams. Come on, give me some credit. I mean, God.
Well, I don't know.
This is so bad. This is bad. but yeah, it's just not a good situation here. But again, the match is garbage. I gotta be honest with you, JR. I don't remember the mid card or the undercard of the show being this terrible. I really don't. It's amazing. It's just not good. I mean, again. I think what we come back to is, I think what we're still dealing with here is the roster is still in a real state of flux, and you're trying to fit and mix and match these guys, and these guys are still getting paid decent money. Obviously, LOD is not getting paid 1991 money. I'm sure they got paid a pretty penny back then. They're getting paid much less at this stage of the game. But yeah, it's now all these guys. I will say this: all these guys are doing the right thing. Vader, LOD, they're putting over the younger talent. I wouldn't necessarily call DOA younger talent, but
in the asshole. Wow.
I know that's Steve Carell, but I have no idea what that is. Is that The Office?
You suck. Yes, yeah. He says "fuck me" in the asshole in The Office.
Oh, I didn't hear that. I didn't. Well, maybe it's the British version. Maybe it's Ricky, whatever his name is, Ricky Gervais.
They don't said it was Steve Carell.
Oh, I'm saying I didn't hear the swearing at the end. So I thought maybe it was
you're a terrible person.
Terrible. No, this is you. You're playing with my emotions here. This is not good. Playing with my emotions, ruining everything, putting guys over, old, taking managers away. You have no soul. But anyway, the roster's in a state of flux. And they're doing the right thing by putting these guys over. The problem here is DOA needs nothing because they suck too. So,
no, you're right. I mean,
it's just bad on all levels. It's bad on all levels. This isn't like
they
Vader.
Probably could have found a better team.
Got some value.
Yeah, they probably could have found a better team to do this with. I'll give you that.
Yeah, but
I'll give you that much, sir.
But
DOA, let's see. I was trying to catch an age on these clowns. 1961, they were born 10 years after you, so that makes them.
At the time,
35. 36. I mean, that wasn't kind of in the wheelhouse.
Wait, you said 61?
So yeah.
37. Yeah. Yeah. I wish I was still. I was always in their shape then. But
so wait, how old was? Let's see how old LOD was. Born in 57.
So
4 years older.
So
yeah,
they
put over that young talent.
41. Yeah. Hey, it's working. Yeah, just terrible. I just didn't like the manager thing. I love Paul Ellering, but yeah, it's hard for me to see to see them just fall like this. But I understand. I understand what they're needed to do now. It's tough. I'm not gonna lie. But
we've wasted more time in Legion of Doom than anyone ever should in 1988.
Yeah,
let's move along.
All right, so they lose here, and you know, 8-Ball pins Animal with a DDT,
and then you did an 8-Ball to get over it.
At least it's, yeah, I do. At least it's mercifully short, 8 minutes. All right.
I'll say that about the show. A lot of it's mercifully short. That's how you could pretty much sum this one up. But it's a weird show because it's a holdover, which we'll get to in the analysis. But it's also like a proving ground. It's almost like they threw a bunch of these guys out that are either breaking through or getting, you know, kind of climbing up the card. And it's almost like a showcase event. You know, it's not one where we're blowing off a lot of major feuds or angles. It's almost like we're showcasing these guys.
Right. And just kind of, you know, going through the motions and giving these guys some time and kind of just working out the issues.
Yeah.
But again, the difference here is, and we've talked about this, the booking philosophy now in the Attitude Era is not work rate. We've understood that now. It's all about
right.
the gimmicks, the characters, and entertaining. The entertainment now is bolded. The sports is not. Not like in 96 where we had talked about they were getting more athletic. They're not athletic anymore. Now they're make everybody laugh and corny jokes and, you know, boob jokes, toilet jokes, fart jokes, shit jokes, whatever. Something to get a rise. And the work rate can suffer. Not suffer, but if it's a great match, fine. If it's not, who's paying attention anyway? That's the philosophy. Right. We'll get into that over the next couple of years. That's their philosophy. So this show is meant to open up new characters, even if at the expense of the match being any good or not. So that's fine. However, our next match is two guys who could put on an awesome match if you just give them enough time.
Yep.
And of course, here, they don't.
Well, this was like the appetizer. You know, this feud has kind of been, I don't know, say sauteing since May when Owen Hart turned on Ken Shamrock, bit his ear, put him out of action for a few weeks. Shamrock bounced back, won the King of the Ring. The feud picked up with some steam again. And it's an interesting match, Scott. A very interesting setting inside the dungeon at the Hart House.
Yeah. And who would have thunk that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
How'd that work?
Well, the Harts are all kind of, you know, money grubbers. Not really surprised.
Stu doesn't give a shit, so.
I don't want to see money grubbers. I'll say fame.
Well, it's not like Brett like lives there anyway, so. But, yeah. I like the fact Severn's the ref. That adds a nice touch to it.
It does, and he's kind of been still with that, I don't want to say like feud with Shamrock, but kind of like you're waiting for it to explode. They're just kind of all there, hanging around each other. Kind
yeah.
of you feel like the tension, you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
It was it was a cool set. It reminded me a lot of WCF in the basement with the mat and the low ceiling and everything else. And at one point, was it Shamrock's head? Shamrock goes up through the ceiling, right? Owen kind of hoists him up and puts his head up through the you know drop ceiling and everything else. And
so here's my question for you then:
yeah.
Was Smith in charge of the boombox?
Did he
have the right theme song queued up?
He did better than Jim. So Owen ends up using one of the dumbbells that's on the rack, and he pops Shamrock with it and wins the match. And this is just under 5 minutes, just enough. I mean, you can't work a 20-minute match in this setting. So unless they were going to start fighting around the house, which would have been cool too. But I think just under 5 minutes kind of whets your appetite, lets you know these guys, you know, what they're capable of, even in this setting with these, you know, constraints in the short time that they have, can still put on a fun match, and that would really build to their rematch at SummerSlam. Quickly want to mention, because it kind of has to do with Shamrock, the same night as the DX Nation parody,
mm-hmm.
Shamrock was in the midst of this whole thing where he was forced to face like former kings or other kings to really put over that he was the true king. I think he fought, I want to say even for Helmsley on one of those Raws in there, and they had him fighting different guys. I think it was to the build of Owen saying, you know, he was the king, the real King of the Ring or whatever. So he's actually... on one of the Raws, we had a surprise return, Scott. Do you remember who that was?
One of those Raws, we had a surprise return.
It was the July 6th Raw. The return of King Mabel.
Big Raw that night, huh?
Yeah, he attacked, had a match with Shamrock, and then Shamrock got laid out by Mabel. And there was... Another one of my favorite moments is when he drops the big splash. It doesn't whoop as he comes down, and that would become like his thing for a while. Remember, he would do that, make that noise as he drops the splash. So, Mabel back in the fold doesn't really do much for a while, but he's there.
Yeah, but it was nice to see him back. No Mo or Oscar, just him. More on him later. More on him as time progresses. But yeah, I mean, it was a good appetite whetter. And let me tell you something: 3 stars. For me, for this match, which is half as long as the 1.5-star matches that we've seen in the last hour of the show.
Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun. It was a cool idea, and it was a good match. I mean, what do you expect from these two? You know they're going to work a good match. Shamrock, from here, you know, well, just about the next year or so, really in a groove. Really, really steps up his game. Really becomes one of the best workers in the roster. And a guy you can count on for good undercard matches every month.
Yes, and that will continue as we move on, even with the change in attitude. Oh, no pun there, but and the change in which probably was necessary as we got to the end. But yeah, I was really looking forward to whatever the rematch was going to be for this, and because obviously this was just a taste of two guys who, you know, really went at each other, and I love the presence of Severn. I think that really added the real.
No, I mean, it looks like maybe they're finally going to do something with him. You know, they've been building and subtly teasing this feud with Shamrock and who was the king of the ultimate and all this other shit. And you're just kind of still waiting for it. And he's just kind of the third wheel in this feud right now. And it was an interesting dynamic with these three. I thought it worked well because Owen was a guy you legitimately believed could compete with a guy like Shamrock and a guy like Severn. He had the chops to hang. So it really is cool to see these three work together. No, good stuff.
Yeah, no, it was good stuff. So far, we've had not the most stellar card so far, but the last two matches kind of more than make up for it to a certain extent. I've got a lot of vitriol for the main event of this match. This is one of those shows, JR, overall, where time changes things for me here. I didn't mind the end of the show a while ago. It changes for me here. But we'll get to that in a minute. First off, though, we need to take a breather. When we come back, the last two matches, obviously the two feuds that have really set things in motion for the rest of the year, both title matches. Then we have a lot more to talk about, feedback and et cetera. But first, let us cleanse ourselves of this horrific, horrific undercard and take a break. Because,
let's take a break.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
So there's WrestleChat.net, indeed, where it's at. Great message board, plenty of news topics to browse, WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Still Real to Us podcast, much, much more. It's the official place for the PTB headlines, and if you click the PTB gnome on the right of the screen, you will head directly to our Podbean page and our full catalog of shows. So check it out, WrestleChat.net, indeed, where it's at. Also, head to our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. It's really where PTB began. Our written reviews, the territory wars, and so much more. So head to our message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, iPhones, Droids, whatever you got. Go to Stitcher.com for more details. We also can't forget our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. It's the best research site you will ever find. Past ring results, pay-per-view reviews, and so much more. Graham's a good friend of the show. Always help you with what you need. So that's the history of WWE.com. We can't forget our good friend Jay Womet. Continues to battle with lymphedema. The guy's a warrior, folks. For a guy who's had so many medical problems, he's always in great spirits when he's on the show. He's one of our dearest friends. There's a great way you can help him out. Medical bills are not cheap, particularly with a very a unique condition like his. So head to our board, bigelow34.proboards.com, for more information. We'd also like to welcome our newest sponsor to the program, and that is the Wrestling Forum at twfnews.com. Listen, they're a wrestling forum, they're a blog site, but really they're much more than that. The guys at TWF are looking to create a wrestling media nation by affiliating with as many top-quality blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts as they possibly can. And that includes yours. They're the official forum of WrestleChat.net, and we here at The Place to Be have already joined up to have our podcast featured on there as well. So go check them out and find out what they're doing, what they're about at TWFnews.com.
Hey, Place to Be Nation, this is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
And we be back. Hope you enjoyed that break. We are in the reviewing.
Yeah.
Reviewing a fully loaded 1998. We have two matches left. We've already been through the first six of this uninspiring card. I feel like this is the most blasé pay-per-view we've done in a while, Scott.
Yeah. PTB Nation, you are the greatest fans in the world, and you are family, and we're doing the best we can. We certainly apologize if we're not inspiring you to throw this tape. We leave everything on the table for you. We're not going to lie. We're doing the best we can. It's very hard to inspire you to throw this tape in, but maybe these last two matches will. Maybe they will. You know, maybe we'll get particularly for me for this one, obviously.
Right.
Next up, we have.
And just to say this reminds me a little bit of No Way Out. I feel like that was the last kind of blah pay per view we had, but that was definitely even better than this one, I think.
Yeah, because I mean the undercard for both of these similar, but not as bad.
Well, at least No Way Out. This is also on the SummerSlam. I say No Way Out. You have the build to Mania, but maybe the excitement at No Way Out was bigger because like things were changing so rapidly, and here is almost like this is just like a status quo kind of show.
Yeah, show to kind of not.
Raw was so good at this point. You almost would rather watch Raw than this that we're getting here tonight.
I think there was a lot of cases where I think there was a lot of cases like that through the next year. I mean, I remember you would feel this way for the next at least year and a half that you almost were looking forward to the Raw the night after more than the show itself. And it was starting to get that way towards the middle to the end of the year. But all right, our next match is our...
My next match?
Your next match is our first title match of the evening. How about that?
Wow, crazy, huh? I feel like we have usually title matches every... Freaking other match.
Every freaking next match, yep. But right now, the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship is on the line. We're finally, JR, the captains, the leaders, the generals of the armies known as D-Generation X and the Nation of Domination finally collide with something in the line. Triple H. Yeah. It's amazing how you knocked me off my feet. And considering this is a very difficult night for me emotionally, as I see one betrothed fall further low, the other one is moving up the ladder, shall we say. Triple H getting his shot at your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion.
How many falls did he beat you in?
That's for another podcast. The Rock, as Vince would say.
Yes. Interesting match here.
Yeah.
Set to be a 2 out of 3 falls match.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me of those old school WCW matches in like the early 90s, like Beach Blast when like Steamboat fought Rude and those quickie Ironmans. Kind of similar. An interesting concept here. It was a 2 out of 3 falls with a time limit. So obviously... totally, you know, storyline weighted down because when was the last time we had a time limit at a pay-per-view, particularly this time of the year?
Yeah, it was a good one, though. I liked it. It was interesting. I think it was a good test for these guys to see if they were ready to deliver this kind of match. And you could tell they had been building to this with everything going on between the two factions. Mm-hmm. They finally collide here, like you said, with the belt on the line. And, you know, another one you could tell they were going to obviously have a rematch at... SummerSlam. So to me, they were, you know, clearly building that way. It was just a matter of how they were going to get there, how they were going to go about it. Did you like the stip at the time? Did you think they were going to be able to pull it off?
I did. I did. I just hated the way it was booked. It was horribly overbooked. Run-ins and all this other crap floating around. I think it kind of ruined the flow, but the stip I had no problem with. I thought it was very challenging. I think it was good for both guys. You know, to me, JR, these two guys were the epitome of the solid, bona fide mid-card feud of two future stars. You know, it's very similar to, you know, what we saw in the late 80s with the Intercontinental title, you know, where two guys would you knew were destined for
right.
great things.
Yeah.
And their Intercontinental title feud, whether it be Warrior Rude or, you know, Perfect or anybody like that, you know, or Brett, you know, Brett 91, and you know, you knew that for the first time in a while, the Intercontinental title feud definitely was a precursor for something great, you know, down the line.
I appreciate that.
I appreciate that. But he didn't. He could have been on that team instead of Bradshaw, but he wasn't. Now, again, the stipulation, JR, did not bother me. The booking of this was a mess. I mean, it was just overbooked, run-ins all over the place. There were some rest holds, and you know, you got to expect it from these two guys who maybe aren't entirely comfortable with this kind of environment, this kind of stipulation. But I thought they did the best they could. Just I thought the overbooking and running in and all this other stuff kind of ruined the flow. Thank you.
Yeah, still, I mean, I think they needed a little bit to go the full 30, which they do, of course. Rock pins Triple H at 2019 for the first fall. I mean, that in itself is a pretty good match length for these two.
Exactly.
Rock wins clean at the Rock Bottom. China gets involved 6 minutes later. Triple H hits a DDT on a chair and ties it up. And then at 30 minutes, the bell rings. They hit the time limit, and we have a draw. I mean, I think it was great. I think 98 is a time where they really made a point, especially in the summer now, of saying we're going with our young guys. We're going to make, you know, they make fun of WCW every week for pushing the old fucks and old farts and everything else. And
the old fats,
they wanted to really they made it a point to showcase these young guys. I said, you know what? We're going to trust our talent. We're going to trust the youth that we have, and we're going to get it done. We get the viewers now. You know, we're going to let these guys run with the ball. So they stick them out there and say, go 30. And you know what? They do a damn good job. They really do. They have a good match. Yeah, there's a lot of overbooking, but whatever. That's the era, so you deal with it. But it made sense because DX and Nation have been so heated these last couple of months that you knew they couldn't stay away. So to me, it made sense to have them come out. It was a good match. I think it was a nice harbinger. I think it's the one that kickstarts this. You know, these guys haven't really seen much of each other until the Nation stuff started with DX. You know, before that was, what, February 97 with when Rocky defeated Hunter Helmsley for the IC title. So now they're back again feuding for the same belt. Both more mature, both look like stars now instead of before. They look like, you know, guys trying to be stars, if that makes sense.
No, you're right. I see what you're saying.
You know, and these are guys we knew the careers were going to be parallel to each other, and they, you know, meet back up here. They cross again. So, you know, this is going to continue another month. It's just a matter of where they're headed next.
Yes.
Who did you think, and be honest, and be fair, at this point, if you had a bet on one of these guys to become a star, who are you taking?
Rock.
Right? Obviously.
Yeah. I know. That's why I appreciate Triple H and why he's one of my favorites, because I think he had to work harder than most of them did.
Well,
Rock didn't work hard. Let me rephrase that.
Go ahead.
He had to go the little extra mile because his charisma was not as natural as Stone Cold.
Yeah, but you could flip it and say, I mean, Rock got that mega push kind of early, but after that, I mean, he had to work his way back up, whereas, you know, when Hunter finally breaks through, you know, as we'll see a year later, I mean, he was pushed to the moon over and over. So, yeah, he had to maybe work harder to get that charisma down, but on the flip side, I think he was put in a better position to do it.
And, you know, you can't dispute this. He had the benefit of being with Shawn for a while, so he was able to kind of siphon off some of that main event. Tutoring. You know what I mean?
I just think at this point,
Rock was in essence left out in the cold. I mean, what happens if he doesn't think to turn heel in 97?
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's toast. He goes the way of, you know, Eric Watts or fucking Greg Gagne or something. You know, this generation guy who falls flat on his face. So I will say that. However, at this point, Rock had gotten his niche. quicker than Hunter did. And I think that this match helps both of them. But Rock, obviously, you know, yeah, he was Intercontinental Champion before Rock was, but who's had the better half year, really, if you think about it?
Rock.
Rock did. I mean, his matches were a little more high profile. Again, now, in Hunter's defense, DX was in a state of flux after Sean left. So he had a little more character fixing to do than Rock did.
Rock, to me, if you had to pick one of the two, Rock stands out. To me, Triple H at this point still seemed like a mid-carder trying to step up. He still was like a little too goofy. He was trying to be more serious, but still a little bit goofy, almost a little comedic. Whereas Rock, he had the comedic aspects, but was still very serious. I mean, that comes with being a heel, but I just think he looked more like a main eventer, whereas Hunter looked more like a guy still trying to climb that ladder to be a main eventer.
Yeah, I think so too. And to his credit, he does succeed, and we'll tell you when we get there. But at the moment, I like the fact that these guys were in their specific roles, because Rock was at that position where being the champion was fitting for him, and Hunter was chasing it, and it was very symbolic of where they're going.
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan Update.
Vinny K. Mac here with the Jim Duggan Update, taking a break for the stupid 20th anniversary bullshit show I'm on. It's funny to hear you talk about specific roles, Chris Golo. You would know about that. You've been hanging out at the Golden Corral with LaRue lately. All right, Atlanta, Georgia, Georgia Dome, July 6th. Jim Duggan lost to the Giant. Who gives a shit? July 7th, Saturday night taping in Macon. He defeated Stevie Ray Vaughan. They're fighting over some guitar or some shit. I don't know. Defeated Rick Fuller on July 13th, Nitro from Las Vegas. I don't know why they were there. They're fucking losers, man. They fit right in. Jim Duggan defeated Roadblock July 16th. That's exactly what this report is. It's a roadblock in my life. I'm tired of it. July 27th, he defeated the Barbarian. I remember that guy. Then he worked for me one time. Defeated Hugh Morris on July 28th. Defeated Barry Darso on July 29th from Baton Rouge. That's what you wear every night when you're dating with your boyfriend. Triple H, isn't it, Scott Criscolo? You were Baton Rouge. Alexandria, Louisiana, defeated Barry Darso, and then he beat him again July 31st. July 32nd, Jim Duggan defeated Kendall Windham. July 33rd, he lost to Brian Adams. All right, I'm out of here. They call me to the ring. I got to get back to the gorilla position. Fuck you, Criscolo. Suck it, you bitch.
July 33rd.
He's on another planet tonight.
Jesus Christ. And don't let him make fun of my Mulan. I mean, but whatever. Alexandria, Louisiana. Is that even a place? Alexandria, Louisiana?
I think Vince
how many times do you have to fucking wrestle Barry? That's the most wins he's had. He had more wins in the month of July 98 than he did the previous 12 months combined.
I think he just blacks out when he's doing that. I think you know what he's saying.
He beat Barry, poor, what was he, the golfer? Was that when he was... What the heck was his character? What was the golfer character?
It was Payne Stewart originally, or Stewart Payne, or something like that.
Stewart Payne, yeah.
And then when
he died, so that could have been. Well, that could have been 98 because Payne Stewart.
No, yeah, it was. Well, yeah, he had it, and then when he died, he changed it to Barry Holden One Darso.
Yeah, well, at this point, it was probably Payne Stewart because the real Payne Stewart didn't die till the following year. So,
was either Payne Stewart or Stewart Payne? I can't remember what he had as the name.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But obviously, it was a lot of pain because Duggan beat him like 11 times that month. So. As I was saying before...
Well, he had extra days to do it with, so...
Yeah, well, before Vinny Crack interrupted me there. Oh, fuck, I lost my train of thought. God damn you, Vince! I know what I was saying. These two were at their perfect
stages. It was Stuart Payne. Sorry, go ahead.
Stuart Payne, okay. These two were in their perfect spots. It was better for Rock to be the champion because he was the more established guy charismatically, mm-hmm. and Triple H was better chasing because he needed to continue to build.
It's an interesting word, charismatically.
Charismatically. You like that? I think it's a word. A-L-O-Y? I don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
If you win this match, you charismatically earn a berth in the Royal Rumble.
Charismatically. Come on, that would have been a good word in the opening of a pay-per-view. It's the Royal Rumble. 20-30 charismatically allowed men. All right, so Rock hangs on to the title as each guy gets a pin, and then the time limit runs out at 30 minutes. So, were you surprised after watching it that it was as good as you as it turned out to be?
Yes and no, I guess. I mean, not completely surprised because they are very good. But,
yes.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think I was surprised to let him go 30. I probably didn't expect that.
Probably because the other matches were so short and so unbelievably bad. So, okay, so there you go. The Rock retains his...
You retain.
Retain what? His Intercontinental title as the match ends in a one-pin each 30-minute draw. All right, time for our main event, and...
No, you forget. One
More thing. I'm sorry. I have to page up. Sorry, I paged too far down. Yes, there is one more thing. Very important thing at this show. Probably the thing that makes up for the entire first six garbage matches is this thing here. That's right. Mark Merrow comes out in a bikini. Oh, sorry. LaRue what? Wishes what? Sable, of course, continuing her extended feud with Mark Morrow. Who's now with his girl, Jackie. They have a bikini contest. Another facet of the Attitude Era. Let's throw the girls on the screen and shake the moneymakers. One moment was shocking on purpose. The other one was shocking by accident.
Well, first, before we even get started, Dustin Runnels comes out.
Oh, boy.
Over the spring, had ditched the Goldust persona after he got pissed off and did kind of a shoot thing. He burned the costume and said he hated Goldust and what it represented. And he actually had issues with Vince McMahon, and he ended up getting fired because he lost the match. And then he came back and all this other crazy shit. So he's kind of become a religious zealot at this point now, because he's going so far the opposite way from the Goldust character. He's out there protesting about morality and everything else. So he calls for this contest to be canceled and prays for everyone, and then he leaves. So the match happens, or the contest happens. Jackie has a very revealing bathing suit, basically just two thin strips across her nipples, and one of them is revealed.
Yes, one of them escapes.
Thin piece of material slides to the left. Yep. And then Sable takes her outfit off, and her bikini's two handprints painted on her tatas.
That's right.
And she loses because of this, because it's not a real bikini. It's a technicality. So Jackie is the bikini contest winner, but I think we all won on this evening.
Yes, we did. I am currently reading, JR, I don't know if you read it, Dustin's book, the book Crossroads, story about Goldust. And I'm at the point now in the book, and I highly recommend it. It's not a long book. It's very short.
I can see it being like on a fourth grader's summer reading list.
It's about the size of it. Yeah. I'm at the point now. He was, in his personal life, Dustin was an absolute disaster right now.
Oh, yeah.
Really on painkillers, drunk. It was bad at this point. And I think this was like a last-ditch attempt to maybe find some type of new character. Goldust was pretty much spent at this point.
I actually liked this character at the time. I remember thinking it was pretty unique and pretty cool to see him break away from Goldust and do something a little bit different. And I thought it was unique. I liked the whole religious aspect of it, and especially with the product becoming raunchier, it really kind of resonated. Mm-hmm. And I thought he was good in the role.
Yeah, I thought so too. Unfortunately, he was just such a disaster that he really couldn't maintain it,
right?
Which is kind of lousy. But
you're lousy,
and it kind of sticks for a while. Obviously, he sticks around. He doesn't get fired or anything, but he was threatened a few times. He says in the book that he would call the booker saying, "I'm sick, I can't," and they know why he was sick. It wasn't "I got the flu," it was "I'm dope sick," and they told him to go pound sand and get your ass to the arena, and it was not a fun time for him right now. But the bikini contest was a typical way that the divas were going to be used over the next 3 years. So good eye candy again, makes up for a majority of this garbage undercard. So all right, now we get to our main event, and of course it involves the two big studs in the company right now, and pumping up the biggest match, in my opinion, the biggest main event in SummerSlam history that is coming up. Stone Cold Steve Austin, your World Wrestling Federation champion, and his tag team partner, the number one contender, The Undertaker, taking on, can you believe this? New!
What?
World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. And I didn't book this, so don't blame me.
They're not booked?
There was a tag team battle royal.
There was?
On June 5th, yeah, back on June 15th, before King of the Ring, for a tag title shot. On the July 13th Raw, Kane and Mankind.
It's gotta be Kane!
Yes, him and Mankind, who I can't believe is still breathing at this point with a big hole in his lip, upset. Would you call this an upset?
No.
Upset the New Age Outlaws.
No, I wouldn't.
Tag team. No,
but
I wouldn't.
It was still a cool change and not one that was expected. But it kind of made sense where they were headed with this tag match here. Really just a way to kill time before SummerSlam with Austin and Undertaker set to face off. So the tag titles are on the line here. So it makes it a pretty juiced up main event. And let's talk quickly about Mankind. A couple weeks after Hell in a Cell, he came out and cut this real serious promo. Mm-hmm. You know, about what he had endured and all this other stuff. And he talks about this in his book at great length, how the reaction to the promo was like nothing. Like, and no one seemed to care. And it was at that point he realized the days of, you know, the promos like he cut in ECW and some of his Mankind stuff, the really intense, serious promo from deep down inside him with a lot of, you know, hatred or a lot of soul searching, that was going by the wayside. People weren't interested in that. He was better off doing stunts or doing comedy. And from here on out, a lot of his promo work and mic work becomes very comedic based, and Mankind almost becomes a little loony or a little dopey. So it's interesting the route he takes now from here to mix things up.
Yes. And it's almost, it kind of fitting that these two actually got together, because they were kind of like the weird Island of Misfit Toys situation.
Right. Well, both managed by Paul.
Yep. Obviously Kane much more serious, obviously much more up the ladder than Mankind is at this point.
Well, not really.
So you had no issues.
Well, I mean,
well, kind of.
Love
I
was,
mean, yeah, but I mean, Kane obviously was on the upswing. Mick, let's put it this way: Kane was on the upswing. Mick was plateaued. We'll call it that. So you're not surprised and not upset that the New Age Outlaws lost here.
No, because it made sense to put the titles here just for this little run. And Outlaws were a team that could lose and win at will. It wasn't really going to matter at this point. They were so over with DX and everything else going on that I don't think them losing to Kane and Mankind really hurt them at all. So okay. I thought it was fine. I thought it made this match seem, you know, extra special. The Outlaws don't even really make the show other than running in that last match. So it was kind of a good break from them, I thought. They'd been on every pay-per-view for a while now. So, but it was interesting to see where Mankind will head, and we'll talk about it over the next few months. But, you know, I get it. I can see why Foley would have felt bad and why he felt like things were changing on him, and they do. And I'm glad to see he adapted, because that old deranged boiler room loving Mankind was really kind of passe at this point, and he needed to make the character seem new and fresh again, and that's what he does.
Yes, he does. Now, as for the other two,
yes,
obviously we had said at King of the Ring that it was announced. Did we give the official date? Just to recap, when was it officially announced that these two were the main event at SummerSlam? Did we say it was before King of the Ring?
No, it was after King of the Ring.
Yeah, I thought so.
It was... we got to talk, first of all, we're going to backtrack quite a bit. At King of the Ring, of course, Kane won the World Heavyweight title in the first blood match.
Yes, I definitely want to talk about that. That's right, I definitely
want to talk about that. The next night on Raw, Austin received his rematch and defeated Kane for the title. So Kane only had a one-night title reign. Steve Austin, again, is the world champion. On July 6th, Vince McMahon announced that Austin Undertaker would team to face Kane and Mankind. And I was trying to see if they said... Let me go to SummerSlam really quick on here.
Okay. While he's doing that, I want to go back to a point that...
it was July 6th. Vince announced SummerSlam number one contender match between Kane, Taker, and Mankind. Taker... Oh, yeah. This was the classic match. Taker didn't even appear.
Oh, that's right.
When the match started, Kane beat the shit out of Mankind and was winning to the delight of McMahon. However, after he won, he ripped his mask off, and it was actually Undertaker in disguise, and McMahon was pissed. He became obsessed with proving that the brothers are now in collusion and conspiring against Steve Austin here. So this kind of carries through fully loaded into SummerSlam, when we'll get into it more, all the stuff with Vince. But yes, that was pretty much the gist of what was going on with these four at this point.
Okay. At King of the Ring, in our King of the Ring show, You said there were three great reasons why Austin lost to Kane in the first blood match at King of the Ring.
That doesn't sound like me.
Two of them made sense. One of them involved storylines. The other two I agreed with you on. The first one you said was, and I quote, Kane needed this win to legitimize him as champion. Now, how do you possibly do that in one day?
And I quote.
Wow. I would have done. Well, give me your answer, then I'll tell you what I would have done to help make that point you made better than the way it turned out to be. Go ahead.
Well, I was talking more about, like, in real time. You know, the process may be right, even if the results are wrong. And to me, giving Kane that win solidified him as a main event player at that time. So this is a guy that won the world title. He's now defeated Steve Austin. And, you know, you can explain away the loss the next night if you need to, but he's been made. And is it a shit run? Yes. But at that time, ending that pay-per-view with him with the title, to me, was a pretty good move. Where they went with it the next night, you could argue. But.
Okay. I'm agreeing with you. But see, now that there you go. Yes, I have no problem with Kane winning.
What kind of disgusting, despicable.
Yeah, Billy What's-His-Name probably did book this. That's why it sucks so bad. But giving
Kane... Maybe to wrestle Ron?
I don't know. But one day is just ridiculous. This is what I would have done.
Yeah.
This is what I would have done.
Tell me.
First off, Austin, as I mentioned in our King of the
Ring
show...
Give it to me.
Austin still had that staph infection on his elbow. So he was like at 89%. What I would have done is may Austin wait a month, have Vince say, nope, I've decided, you know, the doctors say you're not fit to wrestle tonight on Raw because of your elbow injuries. But, Austin, I will give you your title match with Kane at Fully Loaded. So you get the rematch at Fully Loaded. Austin's a little healthier. Meanwhile, Taker punishes, Vince punishes Undertaker for what he did to Mankind. Not punishes. Rewards him. Rewards him for what he did to Mankind by getting a tag team title shot at Fully Loaded against the New Age Outlaws. But, Undertaker, there's one condition. Mankind must be your tag team partner.
That's interesting.
So Taker and Mankind face the New Age Outlaws at Fully Loaded for the tag titles. You still got your number one. Well, then they do the whole number one contender thing. Meanwhile, Kane and Austin wrestle for the world title at Fully Loaded in what would be a better match because Austin's elbow would be a little more healed. And you give these guys, without the whole stupid blood stipulation, all that crap, you give these guys a good 15, 16, 17 minutes to put on a really good match. Then you get an opportunity to see if Kane is a legit world title guy. You give him a real match on a top flight show, well, not a top flight show, on a secondary show with a lot of people watching, and you really get to see whether the guy could be a future world champion. That's how you do it. You don't give him one day, make Paul Bearer giggle, and then Austin comes out on one arm and beats him the next night.
Now, I like the idea. I like that idea a lot. The only thing I would say is it's kind of cool to see Austin and Taker have to team leading at SummerSlam and have them at the same level. If you have Taker teaming with Mankind against the Outlaws and the undercard, it almost, I don't want to say diminishes him, but it takes him out of that main event picture where, to me, these 8 weeks from King of the Ring to SummerSlam were all about making Taker a legit threat, a legit top guy with Austin, the two top guys in the promotion. And I think if you have him teaming with Mankind against the Outlaws, I don't know, it's kind of like, you know, this is the guy that's, you know, in the biggest match in the company and, you know, big match in SummerSlam history, however you want to say it, at MSG, and he's, you know, teamed with Mick Foley against the New Age Outlaws the month before. To me, I liked having him here almost as an equal to Steve Austin, because that's how it was presented. I liked the card that you presented. I just think it wasn't the right time for it.
Fair enough. I agree with you. I like that philosophy about – I like your reasoning there about Taker. Maybe I rework it another way. My point is if you really wanted to establish Kane as a legitimate world title contender, giving him the belt for one day is not the way to do it.
No.
How about this? How about you work it where, you know, Taker, I should fire you for, you know, pulling this over on me and taking away your number one contender slot. But I like your whole kind of, you know, the heel way of going about it. Some way where you maybe could talk around him being in that second match without him losing that cachet. I mean, it is Taker.
I mean, the only other way you could... No, of course. But to me, these 8 weeks were, like, super pushing of Taker. Like,
I agree.
More than even ever before. Like, you needed to make him... This is like their Hogan Warrior. You know what I mean? Like, you needed to make him... That would have been like if, you know, they had the Saturday Night's Main Event, or it's hard to compare, but at the Rumble, if Warrior had teams with Beefcake.
Okay. How about this? How about you make Taker like the enforcer or the referee or something?
Yeah, you just did that at Over the Edge. But I mean, you could do a four-way for the title, but then you don't want Taker and Austin really touching too much.
No, you don't want them. Exactly.
I don't know. I think the way they did it's the way you had to go.
It sucks because I think it. I think it.
Well, maybe you just don't have Austin lose. You just don't do first. I mean, if in your world, if you don't want Kane to have a one-day run, then you just don't do the title change. That's all.
And then maybe you give. Then what I would have done? How about this? What I would have done is had Kane and Austin in a regular match at King of the Ring.
Right.
Then have Taker maybe interfere. And lose there, then right. Have some kind of a stipulation of Fully Loaded and Taker interferes again. Something like that. I just feel the only reason I'm doing this is because you said that Kane needed to be tested because he's been so hot throughout the beginning of 98 that Kane needed to get an attempt. Could he be a future world title contender? You said that at King of the Ring, so all I'm saying right. is if that's the case.
Yeah, the way they present it on Raw is like he kind of gets hosed. Like he right. gets forced into the rematch by, you know, Paul Bearer accepts the match. And I think it was, I don't know. I think it's fine.
Well, I mean, I'm not, looking back, it's not that big a deal, but all I'm saying is you said that Kane should be a world title, and I don't disagree with you. My point is the way they executed it, if that's their thinking, was stupid. That's all. I would like to have seen Kane and Austin in a one-on-one with both of them healthy with no dumb stips and just let the two go at it. I think it would have been awesome. I mean, I don't really remember, I'm not going to lie, I don't really remember the match on Raw that night after King of the Ring. I mean, it probably wasn't terrible.
No, I think it was one of those, like, wild kind of sprint brawls.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, Merlin.
Austin working with one arm, it doesn't help. But anyway.
All right, Merlin, enough Austin of your fantasy, fantasy booking.
Yeah, no, yeah, enough of my the way my Rav booking. In any event, the way it turns out, Austin and Taker have to be forced to team together and take on the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, Kane and Mankind here. In a 17.5-minute match that was not awful. I mean, you know, you're dealing with four big dudes. Three big dudes in Austin. Big meaning size, not big meaning,
right.
You know, level of the card. I had no problem with it.
It's a fine match. This is just the first one in a while where you say, well, you don't really need to pay for this show because you're not getting great matches. You are not getting... you know, 5-star work rate. So if you're not going to get that and there's no real storyline advancements, a holdover show, it's kind of like, well, you didn't really need to pay for this one. You're not missing much. Nothing, no titles changed. You know, nothing crazy happened. It's just kind of there. But the match itself is fine in a vacuum.
I don't think I saw the show live. I think I missed the show. It's the last show that I missed for a good stretch. And obviously the tension was, you know, Taker would kind of, you know, let Austin get the shit kicked out of him, or he'd kind of half tag, be pissed off about it. Obviously, they wanted Taker to kind of slightly be a little more heel, you know, because Austin was the guy, and Taker could do that well. In the end, Taker gets in the ring, hits a tombstone on his brother, and Steve Austin and The Undertaker are your World Wrestling Federation.
And I thought it was key that you have Taker get the pin. I thought that was a nice touch. Make mm-hmm. him look really strong heading in. So.
And then to add insult to injury, he takes both belts and leaves.
Right. Yeah, good. So the new tag team champions, I thought the main event, the last two matches, well, we'll see even the last three. Owen Shamrock's only 5 minutes, but it was well done. But the last two really carry this show. And again, they're the two longest matches easily on the card. So right. It almost takes it from a surefire thumbs down to kind of a, all right. You know, it's not terrible. It's not great, but it's kind of there kind of show.
Right.
So I don't think there's much more to say about the analysis itself. It really is just a holdover, just a filler show. They were really building to SummerSlam, and if this had to be a casualty, so be it. You know, it's fine to sacrifice the show for the greater good. I ordered it, and I'm sure a lot more other people did too. That's just how it was at the time. You cared enough to order it, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't remember seeing the show live. I think I rented it down the line, or somebody dubbed it for me. But anyway, we both gave it C. The undercard is just bad. It's just bad. The last two matches and the Sable, Jackie Nips action pretty much saves the show from being a complete mess. The only match that's on anything, thanks to our good friend Graham Koth on the history of WWE.com, mm-hmm. is the Triple H Rock title match, which is on that new, not the history of the Intercontinental title that came out in like, you know, whatever, 90-something, or not 90-something, that came out, the single disc that came out, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years ago, but the really good 3-disc that when they were doing those sets with the titles, mm-hmm. the history of the Intercontinental Championship, it's on there. So that's it. Only match that's on there, and probably for good reason, obviously.
All right, so
now, feedback, we got a couple of big things to
talk
about.
Well, hang on. I just want to say one thing quickly. Yeah. To me, Sable almost comes out as the biggest star of the show, if there's one thing you're going to remember about it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Obviously, for the because that moment for her was the was the biggest shock of the era at that moment. I mean, yeah. My God, she's technically naked.
Yep.
She's technically naked.
This is a major overstar at this point. With Sunny fading away, Sable's really launched herself to that top level. So, okay, as Scott was mentioning, in lieu of feedback tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about what was going on in the industry in wrestling at this time. If you want to check out everyone's great feedback, go to bigelow34.proboards.com. There's a whole thread there, a lot of cool comments as always. We're just not going to have time to get into them tonight because we really wanted to take a minute and talk about what was happening in WCW and also what was happening on Raw with a very interesting concept, Scott. Let's start there.
Okay.
The Brawl for All. Now, we're not going to really get to talk about this because it doesn't make pay-per-view. We will try and talk about it with Kevin Kelly this week on Wednesday night when we have him on. This was an idea they had. Jim Ross is usually accredited for it. Started on June 29th episode of Raw where they had a tough man competition. And it was like this hybrid UFC boxing wrestling kind of thing. They had 3 1-minute rounds. Whatever wrestler connected the most punches per round scored 5 points. In addition, if you get a clean takedown was 5 points and a knockdown was worth 10. If a wrestler was knocked out, decided by an 8 count for some random reason, the match ended. And the matches were scored at ringside by judges, who included Gorilla Monsoon at one time. A lot of injuries. A lot of nonsense.
Yes.
A lot of mess. So here was the opening round. Started on June 29th. Steve Blackman defeated Mark Merrow by decision. Merrow was kind of a heavy favorite heading in with his boxing background, but he looked like he wanted nothing to do with this at all. So
yeah,
just kind of lays there and lays down for Blackman. Bradshaw defeated Mark Canterbury, the former Henry Godwin, now part of Southern Justice. Savio Vega defeats Brackets Manoma is Das. Of course, one of the long-lost Hart brothers, Brockus Hart, goes down to Savio. Now, Savio, actually, we'll get to more on him in a minute. Also on July 6th, Draws and Hawk went to a draw. But for some reason, Draws advanced because Hawk was unable to compete afterwards. He got hurt in this. Bart Gunn defeated Bob Holly. The two teammates battled by decision. Steve Williams, technical knockout over Quebecer Pierre. Still hanging on. Dan Severn defeated The Godfather on points, and Scorpio defeated 8-Ball on points on 7-20. Now, this is where things get all fucked up. Blackman got hurt. Hawk got hurt. So they weren't able to even compete for a while. Savio Vega aggravated an old arm injury in this next round when he loses to Draws on points. And he actually ended up having to retire for a while because of it. This is his last match with the WWF. Dan Severn pulls out of the tournament, says he has nothing left to prove, and I think it's because he kind of looked bad in that opening match, even though he defeated Godfather on points. It just really wasn't a fitting style for him in a way.
He was probably also where he was gonna get hurt too. He probably couldn't afford it. Remember, he was still NWA champion. So
yep. So he pulls out, and Godfather gets to advance instead of him, even though he had lost. Going back up to the top though on 8-10, Bradshaw defeated Mark Merrow. Merrow took Blackman's place after Blackman had beaten him but was injured, so he's out. Godfather on 8-3 defeated Scorpio to advance to the semis, and Bark Gun knocked out Dr. Death Steve Williams. Now, Dr. Death Steve Williams, of course, is the Oklahoma legend. He was a big part of WCW, Japan, one of Jim Ross's boys. He brought him in, and the whole idea was this was going to be a vehicle for Dr. Death to really put himself over. And this is why I really want to talk to Kevin about this, you know, if this is a legitimate thing, where they basically wanted him to become the winner of this tournament, the tough man, and go on to a major feud with either Steve Austin or other top-level stars. Well, here Bark Gun clocks him with a left hand. Dr. Death falls. He tears his hamstring and is knocked out cold. So Bart just basically ends his push and injures the shit out of him in one shot. Jim Ross is stunned at ringside. So Bark Gun in the final four. On 8-17, Bradshaw defeated Darren Drozdoff, and Bark Gun defeated the Godfather. And on 8-24, Bark Gun knocked out Bradshaw to win the Brawl for All tournament. So Bark Gun had three knockouts and a decision win in this tournament to become the unlikely Brawl for All winner here. So actually, there's a quote from Dan Severn, said him and Shamrock were not allowed to participate, but Severn asked to actually compete in the opening round. After defeating Godfather, he was told he was no longer allowed to continue. So I don't know if they were afraid they were going to hurt people or what, but there you go.
What a mess. You had a bunch of guys doing this who had no idea what they were doing, and they all hurt each other.
Well, the rules were all screwy. They weren't really clear. There was no tournament brackets given. Everyone just kind of, and then you had guys getting hurt. It was, you know, a cool idea maybe, but looked better on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely looked better on paper. But yeah. I'm curious to talk to Kevin about Dr. Death. I really want to know what the plan for his push was.
I agree.
Before this, if that was a legit story, and how much Bark Gun was, you know, kind of punished, because after this he doesn't really do much for a while. So he obviously had some ill will towards him to kind of waste the heat that he had going into this.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. There's the Brawl for All tournament, which ends careers and and caused a lot of problems. I'm curious too, because Dr. Death. I mean, I think Dr. Death Austin would have been a good feud.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see where they would have used him, if he would have been, you know, with Vince, or would he have been, you know, Paul Bearer? I don't know. What were they going to use him with? I'm not sure, but...
Yeah, Kevin Sullivan? yeah, very, very freaky, very freaky. Now, on the other side of the coin, as you say, we go across the pond, or down the pike, to WCW. There was a superstar in his own right that was growing.
Big things popping.
Big things popping. Looked a lot like Austin, too. He was a little bigger, but looked just like him.
Of course, that was Mr. Bill Goldberg.
That's right.
Started his run in mid-97 and really just out of nowhere. You know, they put him over strong. He started destroying guys on Nitro 1 to 2 minutes. So they had him in a weird feud with Mongo McMichael at the end of the year and almost derailed his whole push because they had him going a little bit 50-50, and then they kind of realized what they had in Goldberg. So as 98 began, he really began running through people, had a big win over Perry Saturn at Spring Stampede, and then he defeated Raven for the U.S. title on Nitro the next night, and that's what really launched him to the stratosphere. Had a successful run over the next 2 months, all building up to a match with 1 week build on TV, and that was the July 6th Nitro from the Georgia Dome, where he challenged Hollywood Hulk Hogan for the World Heavyweight title. The place was packed. It was his hometown. Earlier in the night, he defeated Scott Hall. And then he defeated Hollywood Hogan to become the WCW World Heavyweight Champion in 8 minutes, 11 seconds. A well-known match. Of course, DDP and Karl Malone got involved. Kurt Hennig got involved. It is a chaotic atmosphere. You know, the age-old argument, did they waste this match by having it on TV instead of building to a money match? Yes and no, in my eyes. They were really, you know, killing for TV ratings. They sold out the Georgia Dome. They pulled in a big rating. They launched the new star. I think they could have still built to a rematch that would have done equal money on pay-per-view. Yeah, they probably did piss away a big payday here. I don't know if they needed it just yet. I feel like the more money was lost later in the way they'd handled Goldberg over the coming months. To me, this could have still been okay if they followed up on it correctly. I think the money was still there with Goldberg. I don't think, maybe short term they lost, but I think having that many people tune in to Nitro to see this momentous occasion was worth it. With the 41,000 people in the Georgia Dome, that atmosphere, you know, if they build to maybe Starrcade with a Goldberg Hogan rematch, you still draw that money, I think.
I think so too. I never totally had a problem with it. I mean, that's what WCW's thinking was at the time, was ratings. Pay-per-view, yeah, they made money on pay-per-view. And we're going to go over quickly what their pay-per-view was that month. It was 2 weeks before Fully Loaded. I'll give you the card in a second. But yeah, I had no problem with it. They needed to pop it. Not that they were in a slump, but, you know, they realized, wow, you know, now we're back to going back and forth when, you know, 96, 97, they were kicking the crap out of them.
Yeah.
Now they're a little panicked. They're a little paranoid. So I don't fault them for doing this. I don't. Yeah. After that, though, the way they handled it was pretty lousy. Now, that following Sunday was their July pay-per-view, which was Bash at the Beach, which was July 12th, 1998, from the Cox Arena. In San Diego.
Fuck Cox.
Yeah, so your favorite cable company, Cox Arena. By the way, the Cox guys, they were late.
Fuck them.
All right, here's the card.
Dicks.
Raven with Lodi and Riggs pinned Perry Saturn in a no DQ match with the DDT. Late in the bout, Canyon appeared ringside, pulled Raven off a table with Saturn, then crashing through two tables after coming off the top. Moments later, Canyon helped Raven to the ring.
All right, we don't need the full play. Just give us the results.
I was looking to see if there was something special to happen. All right, Juventud Guerrera pinned Kidman at 9:55 with a 450 splash. Stevie Ray defeated Chavo via submission at 1:35 when Chavo gave up during a handshake. Early in the contest, Chavo dedicated the match to Eddie Guerrero, who came ringside moments earlier with a pair of scissors. And then Eddie defeated Chavo in a hair match at 11:55.
Yep, and Chavo would shave his own hair off. This is the start of the crazy Chavo gimmick.
Yes. And both those matches are on the Cheating Death, Stealing Life DVD. Conan defeated Disco Inferno in an unadvertised match via KO with the Tequila Sunrise at 2:16. The Giant pinned Kevin Green with a choke slam at 6:59. Rey Mysterio pinned Chris Jericho in a no-DQ match to win the Cruiserweight Championship by reversing an attempt at the Lion Tamer. Moments after Jericho was distracted by Daniel. Prior to the bout, a video package was shown highlighting Malenko and Jericho's interactions over the past week. Blah, blah, blah. Attack Jericho, J.J. Dillon, some other stuff. WCW TV champion Booker T defeated Bret Hart via DQ. WCW world champion Bill Goldberg pinned Kurt Hennig at 3:51 with the spear and the jackhammer after kicking out of the Henningplex. At that point, Goldberg's record was 112-0. In the main event, Hulk Hogan and Dennis Rodman defeated DDP and Karl Malone at 23:45.
Yeah, that was a big-time main event. Yeah. A lot of hype, a lot of publicity for that. It was during the finals when the Bulls and Jazz were playing, so a pretty cool main event. Do you know what the tagline was for this Bash of the Beach, Scott?
No, I don't.
Like skinny dipping in the Shark Tank. Very interesting tagline there.
They're terrible. All right, so there you go. And that, by the way, that main event is on the Rise and Fall of WCW DVD. So.
Yeah, I like that match.
I don't really remember it. I think I have to watch it again. I don't really remember it that well. The only match I really remember from the show is the Ray Jericho match. I remember really liking that. It's on Ray's 619 DVD. I remember liking that match. The only match I really remember from the show. I'll have to watch it again.
So, all right, there is your Fully Loaded, and there's your little time capsule of what was happening in both promotions. The ratings were about even. They were kind of still going back and forth. And, you know, Scott, we talked about this a few weeks ago when you kind of, I thought, misspoke and made it like WCW was on the deathbed already here. They were still really hot. They were still drawing big crowds, still selling pay-per-views, still pulling in good ratings. It's really not until the spring to summer of 99 when things start to really turn. Here it was very much equal throughout most of 98 with WCW and the WWF. So we'll continue to reference on each of these vaults what was happening down in WCW at the same time. So... Yeah, a lot going on. And ECW is cranking along, too, at this point. So
I don't think I meant to bury it as much as I did. However, when we get to next week's vault, I am going to disagree with you slightly about the timeline of not the fall, but when the tide turned. I think it's a lot earlier than you said.
I didn't say the tide turned. You made it like their WCW was cooked. I'm saying they weren't.
No, I know. Yeah, I didn't mean.
The ratings were very back and forth throughout the fall into the winter, and even with, the night in question that we're really going to do a whole show on, that January 4th, Nitro actually beat Raw for the most part that night. So it was after that. I know you're saying, if you're saying quality wise, I'd say the tide has already turned. I think WWF is much better, but it doesn't bear out in the numbers, the ratings, and the money and everything else for a little while still. So Well, we have plenty of time to talk about that. So let's go ahead and wrap up, Scott. Let's quickly talk about the message board again. Bigelow34.poboards.com. It's been redesigned as of today a little bit. A lot of emphasis. I'm having a rough today.
It's emphasis on charismatically, non-sequitur.
Oh, my Lord.
Whatever.
Sound like Rotella today. Jesus.
Oh, my God.
You know, I have been compiling these clips for episode 200. I think I heard too much of his nonsense. So anyway, emphasis on the review section. And if you're serious about reviews and you're going to put together a little catalog for us and you're going to come on here, you know, routinely and review stuff, I'm going to give you your own form. We have one for our buddy Steve Riddle. We have one for Mr. Coldstone. We got one for, you know, Matt MC here with his Looking Back. Josh Richards Wrestling Revival kicks off tomorrow night. You know, so we had a lot of guys that have their own little forum for their reviews. So if you want in, I think things are starting to pick up on this board. I really do. You know, Scott and I are committed to making it work. We want to really get discussion going. We have a board just for the Where the Big Boys Play podcast. If you haven't checked out our episode yet where we appeared with Chad and Parv for Starrcade 88, and they also recently posted Clash 5, the latest episode that's been posted. So all that information is right in the review section as well. They have their own little forum. And one other guy has his own forum on there, and that is you, Scott. So why don't you share with us what you have planned?
All right. I have I've been thinking a lot about what I'm going to do for my reviews. Now, you'll see some of the old stuff that Justin and I have done. What I did, I used to review SmackDown. I reviewed old Prime Times. I did some NWAs. In terms of JR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually write a whole show, and I'm going to try and find some more time to do that as we head.
I
want to
know where this time you assume I have comes from. This is the third time you said it to me today. Now I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying
I have more free time than
no,
you.
No, I'm going to rephrase it. I'm going to rephrase it. Okay, your day is structured differently than mine, whereas you're able to kind of do, you could do a review while doing other things. Whereas,
what does that mean?
I don't know. I don't have an answer. Okay. Anyway, it works out that somehow I haven't had a chance to. So I decided to do this because this will work out well, I think. And it's also for me because I really got a sense when we did our year-end review show with Graham about the current product, and when we all seem very, are we high on it? Are we low on it? It's kind of half and half. So I've decided to do a week in review blog. I'm going to watch all the major wrestling shows throughout the entire week. The only one I can't watch is Ring of Honor because I don't have a channel for that, and it's hard to kind of it's kind of hard to watch it on the website if you don't catch it on a certain day. But I'm going to watch Raw, Main Event, Impact. Yes, I'm going to watch Impact and SmackDown. And at the end of the week, I'm going to do a week-long blog on my thoughts on all four shows and what was good, what was bad, the direction of things, and kind of give everyone kind of an overview of what I think the current wrestling industry is like, in my opinion.
Now, Scott,
I welcome comments. I welcome everybody's input. Again, the only show I can't watch consistently, and I don't want to put it in and do it once some weeks and not others, is Ring of Honor because I don't have a network like JR does for it. So,
all right, Scott, I love this idea. And you've promised you're not going to Rotella this and say you're going to do it and then do it once and not do it.
Yes. No, I agree.
I'm going to lay a gauntlet for you down.
Okay.
For every week that you do not post this update with these weekly shows, one of the Nation members gets to record a Scott Criscolo blast and we'll play it on air.
Okay.
For each week that you do not complete this task.
Okay.
So there you
now,
go.
The deadline is...
You got a full week. Before Raw, it's going to be up.
Yeah, well, I was going to say at least a day. So I'll say by Sunday morning, by Saturday night, so you guys at least have a day to read it and comment.
As long as it's up before the next week's Raw, okay. That is your deadline. If you do not have this all four shows reviewed by the time the next week's Raw starts, a Nation member of my choosing gets to record a Scott Blast, and we'll play it on air.
Well, you have nothing to do in your life anyway.
That's so right. I have all this free time in the world.
All this free time in the world. So,
yes. I don't own a house or have a job or have a 10-month-old baby. And
no, I didn't say that. But it's,
nothing
but
going on.
You've been firing out some awesome shows, and I applaud you for that. I'm not faulting you. You think everything's so derogatory?
What am I supposed to think? You're like, oh, I don't have the time that this man has.
Like that. I did not say like so. No, I know you're the one who's angry. All I said was you've been able to structure your day where you have a small amount of time to be able to sit and write a review, and that's awesome. They're great. If you haven't read them, please do. I read them. I've been reading them as well. They're awesome. I have not had a chance to. So I'm doing this. This is what I'm going to do. This is my participation. And that's what I'm going
to
do.
Well, I like the idea. You just didn't have to be so underhanded about it.
Oh, my God. What is wrong with you? You're so thin-skinned. Jesus.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up because I don't want to take up any more of your precious time with this measly podcast.
Yeah, you're sitting around doing nothing anyway.
I have all night to record and edit these, and you know, you have to get off to your business meetings and conference calls that you have lined up tonight.
Yes, I do.
I want to ask you, how did your personal training session go today?
It went good tonight. It went good. I'm going to have a few more. I'm ashamed to say the percent of body fat that I have to lose. It's not as much as I thought, but it's a decent amount. But
yeah, you're lucky we didn't talk about this before Vince appeared.
Yes. God forbid what his idea would have been. It went well, and I think it's going to go well. So you showed me some of the things you've done. I kind of implicated it. I can't think of the word. We're making up too many words tonight. Worked it into what I'd like to do. And the trainer was a good guy. Ironically, his name was Scott too. And,
oh God!
I paid for a couple sessions, so it'll be very interesting. But it went pretty well. So.
That's good. Hopefully, you'll stick with both of these things as the year goes on.
Yes, I will. I shall. All right, let's wrap up.
We have a big week continuing. Wednesday night, Kevin Kelly rejoins us. We're going to talk the first half of '98. We have about 17 pages of questions to ask him, so that'll probably be another 5-hour show. Now, if you have to go with your busy life, you can just let me and Kevin host. That's fine. Next week we have King of the Ring 98 and maybe JJ.
SummerSlam.
They're
going back in time. What do you want to rehash all the time?
God.
Do I have more of it?
It's been a long day.
Yes.
Next week we have SummerSlam 98, maybe with Dr. G, hopefully.
Yes.
And what's that? That's actually Sunday night next week, right? We're doing Sunday.
Yes.
Okay.
And it might be a Dr. G double because I've not heard back yet. I've not heard back yet, but we are supposed to, on the 24th, have part two of our interview with the awesome J.J. Dillon. Now, if you have not heard part one yet, episode 189, please listen to it. All three of us did an awesome job, I think, and J.J. was tremendous. Very informative, nice, long, detailed answers. It's amazing. We've gotten some great feedback from it, J.R., on how we did, on how the interview went. So
yeah, very well.
Definitely listen to it. It was tremendous.
And actually, next week you will get two shows regardless, Nation. We'll have SummerSlam Sunday and Headlines Wednesday, and that will be, of course, the build to the Royal Rumble. And if we can get JJ back in time, that'll be a bonus show for you. It's the week after, there'll be no shows with me on vacation. So, next week, definitely SummerSlam on Sunday, definitely Headlines Wednesday. We'll have Kyle Forchetti on to preview the Super Bowl at that point. We will talk Royal Rumble, our predictions. We'll go through the news and all the other various things that we do on Headlines. And then hopefully Thursday with JJ. So for now, we will wrap up. Hope you enjoy Fully Loaded. We hope to talk to you Wednesday night with Kevin Kelly, 1998. Continues on.
We could start at like noon, right? Since you're not working or anything.
I got nothing to do. I don't care.
I ain't got nothing to do. Your daughter does all the work anyway, so.
I'm just going to go take a nap and then wake up and do some more reviews.
Yeah, go ahead. It's just like WCW anyway.
Let's go. I will climb a mountain high.
Up to the house in the yellow Lamborghini. It's been a few months in PA, you haven't seen me. You're looking good in that Gucci bikini. 38 carats, your ring looking freezy. No matter what I do in the world, you never leave me. Fall back, ma, I make your lifestyle easy. I appreciate the things you do to please me. Looking at my daughter, you never do me greasy.
Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you. I know what you want, you know I got it. Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you, as long as you want, you know I got it.
Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you, I know what you want, you know I got it. Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you, as long as you want, you know I got it.
Flipmode Records, J Records, Def Jam Records.